KVOE AM 1400 and 96.9 FM, live and local, presents The On-Air Chat. And now, here are your hosts, Aaron Harder and Ron Thomas.
Well, actually, neither of them are on the broadcast here today. Chuck Samples has been tabbed to sit in and host here this morning, and we are glad that you're with us on the KVOE on-air chat this morning, which is brought to you, as always, by Bruce Davis Construction for commercial dirt work, demolition, dirt hauling, and more. Bruce Davis Construction, the number to call is 620-342-5001. This is one of our best days on the airwaves here for KVOE. It is always an honor when we get a chance to talk with the induction class of the National Teachers Hall of Fame, and we have them all here today. And I'm going to start to my left, work down the table, and then I'm going to come back to my right and work down the table for our featured guests here today. We have a retired high school chemistry teacher, Joel Truesdell of Ilo, Hawaii. Joel, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, Chuck. I'm just thrilled to be here.
Glad to have you in. Yeah. We also have with us here a high school English language arts teacher, Shelly Moore Krajacek of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Shelly, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you.
Good. Glad to have you in. Middle school music teacher, Keith Ballard, San Diego, California. Keith, good morning. How are you doing today?
It's a pleasure and an honor to be here. Thank you.
We're glad to have you in. To my right, we have a middle school history teacher, Terry Caldestall of Dausman, Wisconsin. Terry, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having us.
Glad to have you in. A little bit further down the table to my right, we have former English success coach and current assistant principal, Kashia Thorpe of Springdale, Maryland. Kashia, bring the microphone close to you here. Good morning.
Good morning from the DMV. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you in. And now you get to swing the microphone down the table to the right with the 2024 Education Support Professional of the Year, paraprofessional Jen Bramson, Park City, Utah. Jen, good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning. Happy and honored to be here. Thank you.
Good, good, good. Well, this is, as mentioned here, one of our highlights to spend the next hour with educators, especially with the changing landscape, but really to highlight the best of the best in education. And Shelly, I'm going to ask you to get us started here today. It's not a question I prepped you for, but when we mention here best of the best in education, you're in the induction class here. How does that feel to be listed as among the best and the best in American education?
It is my name that gets to be on the plaque, but I know that I stand with and next to greatness, including those in this room. Teaching is, as I always say, teaching is a team sport. I did not get here on my own. My parents both happen to be retired teachers or former teachers. I have a grandparent on each side of my family that's a teacher. I'm actually a fifth generation public school educator. And so within my own family, but I think we can all talk about the amazing people that we've had the pleasure of working with in our classrooms, in our cafeterias, the bus drivers, librarians. My best friend is a school psychologist, and it's the entire team that helps us educate today's children. And so, yes, I get a picture that's etched with my face, which is a little awkward to have in your home, but I am honored, and I share this with all of those incredible people that I've had the pleasure of working with over my career.
Terry, what is that kind of signal when somebody says, hey, you're the best of the best in education, you're in the National Teachers Hall of Fame?
Well, piggybacking on what Shelly's saying, you're only as good as those you work with, and that's absolutely true. But what it means to me is three things. One is I get to use a microphone to talk about those that supported me. We all have our own support systems, and that includes the teachers I work with, my administrators, you know, my parents, even my children have made me a better teacher. It also means I get to tell my students' stories, and every teacher should have that opportunity. And third, I get a microphone to promote and public education and to talk about the great things that are going on in our classrooms.
And we're going to talk about that in a little bit later on here in the broadcast. Kashia, I'm going to ask you. Now, you're also with the designation of the Global Teacher Prize winner. So best of the best in education with a worldwide designation. So how does it feel to be part of the National Teachers Hall of Fame?
So it is definitely an honor to be among distinguished teachers. We are just a small representation of the work that every single teacher does in the classroom every day. And I think we all should be acknowledged and recognized for this. One of my mantra is no one teacher makes any one student great. It takes a village. It takes all of us. And it's not just local or national. It's a global, it's just really global effort, because when we think about all the challenges that students experience across the globe, we all face common challenges. And so teachers across the globe constantly are looking to each other for that level of support. And so we all come together and make all of our students great.
Along those lines, Joel, clearly this is an honor here for you guys, but it's an honor for education in general terms. But we're already hearing here, and we're 5 minutes into the broadcast, about team approach, taking a village, common challenges, common goals, common objectives, common desires when it comes to education. So factor that all in, kind of what's going through your mind here through induction week?
Thrilled to be here. The way that my approach and the reason why I got into education was the best teacher that I ever had and I've ever observed and was my fifth grade teacher, Dorothy Mount Pleasant Krause from the Tuscarora Nation. It was a culture-based, place-based, project-based, inquiry-driven, healing, safe place. It was a magnificent classroom. Now, after that, you know, I wasn't duplicated, and I was kind of just a typical disengaged student, but I didn't know what – I pursued a career in being a chemistry researcher, but ended up being in a classroom at a Kamehameha Schools, a school for Hawaiian youth, you know, and I connected with the culture and taught through the culture. Essentially, what I did was I taught the way Mrs. Krause taught. And really, my students thrived. So everything I do honors her, and it honors the other culture-based educators, you know, that that are striving to help the youth.
Keith, yeah. What does it mean for you to be part of this induction class, and to have that, you know, the platform now that sets up with being among the best of best in education, and kind of dovetailing off of what some of our answers have already been, the team approach that may well be kind of developing with you guys as an induction class as a whole?
Well, I've received approximately 30 teaching awards in my career. I was a Milken National Educator. Keisha is one she'll tell you a little bit about, the biggest and the best award, $1 million award, the Global Teacher Prize. But the Milken was $25,000, and that was to us, funded by Michael Milken.
Right.
And I didn't think it could get better than that. Although this doesn't come with a cash prize, I would say it's a bigger honor. So that, I'm really appreciative. You know, it's an awesome experience. And hopefully I can do something with it, right?
Right.
You know, as far as moving a little bit with the platform. Secondly, so I would take exception to the team approach in that I think I shared with you that I'm the first educator on record that's visited the 17 best K-12 educational countries in the world.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's a number of, most of them are in Asia, Northern Europe, Canada, which is right on our.
Right.
Yeah. Much better than what we're producing here in the U.S. And the scores would show it based on a test called PISA. And our NAEP scores are pretty much in the toilet. But here's my approach. And I think this is how I highlight American education. We teach in classrooms, and the classrooms are individual, right? If you look at the norm of most of the way the teaching in the world is, the teachers are all housed. For example, if you go to Asia, they're all housed. All the teachers are like graduate assistants. So all the science are housed together, right? Mm-hmm. All the music's housed together, the PE. So what you get is a lot of collaboration. So in our sense is, yeah, we have some teachers that collaborate, but we have a lot that are just islands. And That's what I see. So I don't see a lot of team approach here. I don't see a lot of real defined curriculum like you would see in Finland. And again, I can speak on this because I've been to the best and I've seen what the best do. And I would say that many teachers don't know that because they haven't researched that. They haven't been there. So you think you know what's really good, but then when you go and see it, then you go, wow, now I understand it, right? So that's my opinion.
Okay. Jen, I'm going to swing the microphone over to you. And as mentioned here, Jen is our first educational support professional who's been able to join us on the broadcast here with the inductees coming in. What's going through your mind, with the education support professional really being a recent addition to the Hall of Fame, the last, I want to say, 4 or 5 years, and what it means for you to be considered among the best of the best?
That's a great question. Thank you. It's been incredible. Right. I never expected this. This isn't what paraprofessionals are in it for. We kind of work with our head down and do what needs to be done. So to be honored in this way was surprising. I'm proud to be an advocate for all education support professionals. I work locally running my union. I work at the state level, the national level. So it's just a fantastic opportunity to raise awareness for what we do and the value we bring to the education system and our students.
Okay. What I want to do is I want to take our first break here on the on-air chat. Again, we're chatting with our National Teachers Hall of Fame induction class of 2024. When we come back, we've already had a couple of references to how folks got started in education. Want to loop a little bit more into that, what keeps our induction class in education as well. It's 1018 on KVUE and KVUE.com with our on-air chat brought to you today by Bruce Davis Construction.
Warmer weather means it's time to tackle those spring and summer construction projects. When you need commercial dirt work, from demolition to prepare for a building site or parking lot to dirt work and hauling, Bruce Davis will give you a quality job. Bruce Davis Construction is proud to be involved in recent construction jobs, including the addition at Emporia High School, Emporia Travel Plaza, Glendale, and the David Trailer Zoo. Call Bruce Davis Construction at 620-342-5001. Garage sale listings on the air and on the web.
It's so convenient.
At garage sale prices.
And it's just wherever you need it.
Log on to KVOE.com for details.
KVOE 1400 AM 96.9 FM, and time now for a look at headlines from the 24-hour KVOE newsroom and a look at all the latest local headlines. Here is Chuck Samples.
Good morning, everybody. The best of the best in education here in Emporia this week as the National Teachers Hall of Fame induction process continues, including the annual long-form interview on KVOE's on-air chat. An Emporia woman was one of two people hurt in a multi-vehicle crash in North Wichita yesterday. 65-year-old Elodio Castillo de Saavedra was taken to St. Francis Hospital in Wichita for treatment of allegedly minor injuries. And the end of the 2024 legislative session yesterday means the end of the road for two men representing Lyon County, Jeff Longbine serving the Senate's 17th District and 76th District Representative Eric Smith. KVOE forecast from the TV13 weather team. A lot of rain chances here today, anywhere from a quarter to 2 inches of rainfall expected, a high of 84 degrees. Slight chance of showers and storms tonight, 69. Sunny and 90 tomorrow, sunny and 91 Friday. I'm Chuck Samples, KVOE News.
Currently, we do have cloudy skies, 76 degrees at KVOE Live and Local.
KVOE 1022 on KVOE and KVOE.com, our on-air chat here this morning with the National Teachers Hall of Fame Class of 2024. Don't forget, too, that with the activities the inductees will be doing today, there are more public activities tomorrow night. There's the ice cream social. There's the band concert at Fremont Park. We've had some concerns about weather in years past. That's not going to be a problem tomorrow. So join the Teachers Hall of Fame for all the activities at Fremont Park with the ice cream social starting at 7, the band concert at 8. And then Friday, we'll be broadcasting from the National Memorial to Fallen Educators rededication process, 10 o'clock in the morning. And then we have the induction ceremony, official banquet and induction coming up Friday night at the Memorial Union Webb Hall. I believe the doors open at 5:30, and then the actual banquet starts up right around 6 o'clock. Shelley, I'm going to ask you, Shelley Moore Krajacek again of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, one of our inductees here. You started by, and the reason I'm bringing you back is because you mentioned here about being a, fifth-generation teacher?
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any other career path in mind when you were growing up? Or did you kind of feel like, boy, I'm going to just dishearten my entire family clan if I do something other than education?
Well, I was going to go to law school. I did not. The plan was, I mean, I fought it. But I do think that there is a natural pull. There's an inclination to want to do all that you can to help students. And I had extended my stay in undergrad, as some of us do, for a little bit longer. And so I had time to student teach. And I believe it was day two that I knew I belonged teaching. I tried to not do it. But there is this, even when, like several of our inductees have mentioned, we have all had some incredible opportunities over our careers to do different things and have had other offers and other things come our way, and it doesn't seem to matter what those things are. Even if I have stepped out for a minute for something or other, I've always felt that pull to come back, or you find yourself checking social media to make sure a former student is okay. They come into your head in the middle of the night and you want to know how they are. And so that commitment is always there. I'll just tell you real quickly, my father is 87 years old now. He lives in a small town in northern Wisconsin, and we cannot go out to eat without some other relatively elderly gentleman coming up to him and saying, "Mr. Hagg, you taught me in ninth grade, and that person's in their 60s, and my dad's in his late 80s, and we cannot go anywhere without those stories." They're there forever.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Jen Bramson, let me ask you this, because at least here locally, a lot of folks get into the paraprofessionals field, stay in it for a shorter period of time than the teachers do, but then they also come out. So what got you in education? Really, what keeps you in education now?
I always wanted to be in education. I struggled in school, and I knew there had to be a better way to educate students. I planned to go through my teaching program, but life got in the way, and as happens. And my district started a public preschool program that's run by paraprofessionals, and they provide us consistent quality professional development. And it's just been a path forward that I love. I love working with that age group. We really get them set up. We even the playing field. I live in a ski resort town where children don't come in with the same opportunities. We have both ends of, you know, we have multimillionaires and we have children living in poverty. And I love to be that person that just tries to bring them up and get everyone on an even playing field before they start their formal academic life.
Okay, I got a couple follow-up questions, because a lot of people, I think, would see a ski resort community and they'd see everybody's either coming in, but regardless, there's money to burn, for lack of a better term. So what age group are you dealing with for the most part? And how do you help those kids that may not have those opportunities readily available to them, or their home life is not nearly what a lot of us from the outside would see?
Absolutely. We serve 3 to 5 year olds in our preschool program. I teach 4 to 5 year olds. We have a full-day preschool program with before and after school care, so we work with those families that need more daycare. And we get to know them, right? I develop a relationship. They know me. I'm vulnerable with them. They're vulnerable with me. I get to see what their family life is. We have a really strong parent engagement in our school. We're a full dual immersion Spanish English program. We're about 45% Latino in our school. And they want to raise their children up. So they work together with us. And I think it benefits both sides. The ultra wealthy also get to learn a lot from these students that don't have those same opportunities. And they really develop a support for one another that lasts through their education experience. And I value that.
Outstanding. Keith Ballard, let me ask you, what got you started in education and what keeps you in education now, considering you've been at it for a while and you've seen a lot?
Yeah, I'm coming up on 30 years here in December. I plan to retire. And I was a pharmaceutical salesman for 4 years before I became a teacher. It was a very easy job. It wasn't a difficult job, but I didn't see a lot of challenge in it, being happy in front of doctors with a 30 to 60 second pitch on my, you know, ethical pharmaceutical that I'm pitching.
And right.
I just, so, but it's been, I'll tell you from my perspective, okay, again, I probably very different than others here, but I'm a music teacher, and especially in California, you know, it's like education in general throughout the United States. We have pockets of excellence. So one, we don't really have anything that like other countries where we do it like as in one. We have pocket here, it's bad here, it's bad here. And in many cases, things like music are considered second and third tier. So, you know, when the cuts come or we need more time in English. So that's what's happened to me. So if I had to do it all over, and I hate to say this, but I mean, really, it's a bad thing. But I'm going to, one thing about me, I'm a straight shooter. I'm very honest. I would have never been a music teacher. I would have been a teacher, probably would have been a special ed or something like that, because I got so tired of the fights. But I decided to work in low income. And unfortunately, when I work in low-income Hispanic right by the Mexican border, you know, where those kids need music the most, right? Sure. They really do. Mm-hmm. When, you know, we get into cuts and things like that, or, you know, the kids need, kids are behind in reading and math and English. As much as they say, it, you know, it counts, in many cases it doesn't. And that's what made me mad throughout my career. But it wasn't the kids, it wasn't the parents, it wasn't the community that was a great thing. I'm in a pretty good situation now where I have some pretty supportive administrators, but let me tell you something. It's been a rough, bumpy, rocky road of not getting the things that I needed to really support the kids in my community.
So how do you stay in when you're dealing with the exterior and the external stuff like that?
Well, a lot of teachers, as you know, leave the profession.
And it seems like increasingly so.
Increasingly
so. The last 5 years, yeah.
And it's even worse that many of the schools of education don't have people coming in. So that's a huge problem. First, it's kind of like a geometric or incremental problem, but now it's going to get more geometric as people retire.
Right.
But how do I do it? Well, I actually enjoy the community that I serve. I like the kids. I like working in a very Latino community. Our kids are about 95%. I just dig that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I live right by Tijuana. Sometimes I get on my motorcycle, go to Tijuana for lunch, and come right back. I just like that kind of life. But I also like it because California pays well.
True.
And money matters.
There's something to be said
no,
for that.
Money matters. Let's cut the BS. Mm-hmm. Money matters. You have to pay people like a professional. I started in Arizona and it was poverty wages. I had to get out of there or I would have gone to another place. So I'm in a pretty good situation. I'm making about $120,000. I'm going to retire at about $8,600 a month. I don't think there's many teachers that could say that, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and they're going to pay my health benefits to 65. So money does matter, and I don't think teachers fight enough either. I gotta be honest with you. I don't think they fight enough like pilots do and things like that. Pilots just leave the job, and they won't let the airplanes fly until they get what the money they want. So mm-hmm. That's...
Understood. Mm-hmm. Joel, what got you started in education? What keeps you in education now?
What got me in was... Dorothy Mount Pleasant Krauss.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest thing was that when I started teaching, I kind of mirrored her methods of doing it. My principal described me as a transformational teacher. And so the students would go to him when he would ask, and that was what he got from every student. And so I didn't realize it, but, I mean, since Mrs. Krause transformed me, you know, I knew that I was really brilliant and everything in the right situation. I wanted to continue to do that. What kept me in it was I knew the students that I had could be great, all of them. And they would give me, when I started out, I taught all of the classes that were filled with underperforming students. And so for me, it was, I want to give them the same opportunity that Mrs. Krause gave me. And so we recently retired, but what I'm doing now is an elder would. I give presentations, workshops to pass along all of that same information to try to help other teachers be transformational teachers. So,
yeah, Joel. Go ahead, Joel.
And through COVID, you know, with teaching culture-based education, what I did was I solicited systems for our school from Cisco called Presenter Track, which basically it made it more like the kids were watching TV. And so when they came back into class, my students, they'd been entertained enough in my class and engaged enough in my class that they just came right back in. We didn't really have that much of an impact as a lot of the other schools. So,
understood. Joel Truesdell joining us here today among our guests. Kashia Thorpe, let's ask you, education, getting into education, staying in education, and staying at the top levels of education, how did you get in and what keeps you in?
How did I get into education? Well, I think when I was in high school, well, all throughout my education, one of the things all of my teachers would put on my report card is the word chattative. Not talkative, chattative.
Chattative, and then I was that's like, a new one.
What's the profession that you get paid for to talk? But no, on a more serious note, I come from a relatively poor background. I'm from Jamaica. And when I graduated high school, more than 20% of the population was below poverty line. And I would have been a part of that population as well. I didn't see too much opportunities for me to be great. My grandmother really imagined, I grew up with my grandmother as well, and she really imagined a future for us, and education was a big part of that. And she knew education would be one of those transformative pathways for my sister and I. I'm a twin. My sister, Dr. Tricia Thorpe.
Yeah. Is she listening by chance?
Hopefully. And so what ended up happening is that going through high school and having the opportunity to get a scholarship to college, the first thing, you know, coming from a developing country, you're thinking about lawyer, doctor, engineer, and so on. Of course, I wanted to be a lawyer because that's the second most chattative profession. I wanted to be a lawyer. So I went to Howard University, and while I was at Howard University, as an immigrant student, I wanted to kind of really immerse myself into the culture because there was a lot of differences and a lot of culture shocks. And I wanted to figure out how I could become a part of that community. And so what I did was I allowed myself to go to different schools to volunteer to tutor and volunteer for enrichment programs after school. And so what I found out is that there's schools miles away from the White House that looked like schools in Jamaica. And I'm thinking, okay, here I am for a better educational opportunity that I am getting, and then there are students here who have no access to that. And so that really allowed me to pivot from pursuing law and going into education because I wanted to figure out how I could advocate for those students, how I could help education transform their life as I was in the process of transforming my own life with the opportunity of having access to higher education. And I wanted to do that for students. And so my sister and I, before we even left college, we started our own nonprofit organization to help students get an opportunity to get scholarships to get into college, because I know that students like me from poor background do not have an opportunity to go to even access higher education without the opportunity of scholarships. So we've tried to figure out how can we do that for students from underrepresented populations. And so after college, I just dove right into teaching, and my first year I received a certificate as an outstanding teacher, and I was like, whoa. So now I'm kind of locked in. My my school district decided to pay for my my master's in education. So now I was really locked in. I wasn't going to go to law school. But, you know, as a teacher, I thought about not going to those schools that, you know, had students who made it easy for you. I wanted to really teach at Title I and Title III schools. And as an immigrant, I really tapped into schools that had larger immigrant population, because those students I could connect to. Their stories were my story. And we had things in common. And I knew that with my passion and my drive and just charting my own path to success, that's something that I wanted to do for them. I wanted to be the champion for them. And so that's what led me to the classroom. And that's what kept me in teaching for over 20 years. And now I'm in administration, so I get to be on the other side. So when I was in the classroom, my main goal was to just figure out how could I use education to change their lives. And as I morphed into this the leadership role in administration, I'm thinking, how can I use my platform to change their world? Not just change their lives, but change their world. Make a better world for them to be able to live in, to have better opportunities, to have fair opportunities to prosper in, and just create a better life for themselves. So that's what kept me in education.
Good deal.
Can we just drop the mic right there?
Oh, no. It's your turn now, Terry. Terry Caldestall, what got you into education and what kind of keeps you going?
I wasn't as smart as a lot of my colleagues. I didn't had no intention of going into education. I studied journalism, started in radio, and then I got to talk to Walter Cronkite, and he said you need to learn how to write before you learn how to speak. So then I went into print, became a part owner of a small newspaper in California, where I was born and raised, and married an incredible woman from Wisconsin. And long story, we met in New Zealand, but she was a teacher, and she moved to California, and she kept begging me, like, you should get in the classroom. You'd make a great teacher. But I loved what I was doing. Mm-hmm. I loved a reporter and as an editor. And but she kept, you know, begging me, and I wasn't listening, like a lot of husbands, right? And then I said, fine, look, I'll take a class. So I took a night class, History of Education, which I found super fascinating. And then I got a call on Thursday. And it was from her vice principal who said, Terry, we hear you're thinking of teaching. I said, well, I'm thinking about it. How'd you like to start on Tuesday, first day of school? So
say what now?
Yeah. No, that's not good, right? But they trusted my wife enough that they needed a teacher, like, right now. And as soon as I stepped in, that's where I belonged. And it's interesting because when I went into the publisher and I said, hey, I think I'm going to go into teaching. He said, you know, I always thought you'd make a great teacher. I'm like, what? And then I went back to my office, called my mother to let her know. And she said, I always thought, you know, no, here's what she's, I told her, and she said, it's about time. So I thought that was super fascinating. My mother was smart enough not to tell me that I had to discover it, but she always showed me. She wanted me to go one of two paths. She either wanted me to be a priest or a teacher. And I say that because she would have priests and teachers over for dinner all the time. And so the priest thing got ruled out pretty quickly once I started dating. But the teaching thing came later, right?
Yeah.
And I just can't imagine doing anything else. And I get really frustrated when I hear teachers tell their children, you know, you don't want to go into education. There's no more noble profession on the planet. I mean, there isn't a single day when I don't get out of bed and I can't wait to get to my classroom. And like a lot of us could have done a lot of other things.
Yeah.
This is where I belong. And if you see somebody, and I speak every year in Wisconsin, there's a national program called Educators Rising, which is encouraging high school kids to go into teaching. And I tell those kids that same story about, you know, I'm not as smart as you. because I didn't. It took me a while to figure it out. But if you see somebody who has those traits that would make a great teacher, you gotta pave that path. You gotta let them know.
Yeah. It's a little 10:41 here on KFUE and KFUE.com. We're going to take our second break here on the on-air chat. Again, with the National Teachers Hall of Fame induction class, Terry Caldisdahl, Keith Ballard, Shelley Moore-Krajacek, Kashia Thorpe, and Joel Truesdell, along with Jen Bramson joining us here today. We're back with more of the on-air chat after this on KFUE.
Warmer weather means it's time to tackle those spring and summer construction projects. When you need commercial dirt work, from demolition to prepare for a building site or parking lot to dirt work and hauling, Bruce Davis will give you a quality job. Bruce Davis Construction is proud to be involved in recent construction jobs, including the addition at Emporia High School, Emporia Travel Plaza, Glendoe, and the David Trailer Zoo. Call Bruce Davis Construction at 620-342-5001. Join Ron Thomas and Chuck Samples Monday through Friday at 7:15 for the Newsmaker segment. A different guest and topic daily on KVOE 1400 AM and 96.9 FM. Live and local.
KVOE live and local, and time now for a look at sports headlines. Being brought to you by Thurston's Plus Auto Body and Automotive. Call 620-342-2613 when your car needs help. You don't have to go where anyone tells you. Go where you want. Now from the 24-hour KVOE newsroom and a look at all the sports you need, here is Blake Griffs.
Well, the Royals bullpen pitched six shutout innings, but that was not enough as Kansas City was behind 7-2 after Alec Marsh did not get past the fourth inning for Kansas City. Royals came back, but they lost 7-5 on the West Coast yesterday. Nick Lofton had his first career home run on the way to three runs driven in for the Royals. Same two teams today in Oakland. First pitch 8:40 tonight right here on KVOE. Royals did shuffle their lineup ahead of that three-game series with outfielder Drew Waters option to AAA Omaha. Relief pitcher Carlos Hernandez recalled in a corresponding move. Waters making two starts with the big league club while he was here. He had appeared in three games, was hitting 125. Royals manager Matt Quatraro says he's being sent to Omaha to work on his entire game. Meanwhile, Hernandez has pitched very well in the minor leagues at 1.50 ERA there over his last six minor league appearances. Emporia State adding two to its recruiting class for 2024. Defender Ruby Ryan transferring to ESU from Middle Tennessee State, played in one game for the Blue Raiders last year. Megan Jeremiah is now a Lady Hornet after transferring from Murray State. She appeared in nine matches last year at midfield for the Racers. And the Kansas legislature did pass a measure yesterday designed to lure one or both of the longtime Kansas City franchises across the border into the Sunflower State. House passed the bill 84-38. Senate followed, would allow the state to issue state tax and revenue bonds to pay up for 70% of the cost of a stadium for one or both teams. Governor Laura Kelly says she'll sign the bill. That's sports. From the KVOE Sports Desk, I'm Blake Cripps.
Thank you, Blake. Sports headlines brought to you today by Thurston's Plus Auto Body and Automotive at 708 Lantern Lane. Information available in the Yellow Book and on the web at thurstonsplusautobody.com.
Segment number three of the KVOE on-air chat. It is our National Teachers Hall of Fame induction program, and we're pleased that you're joining us here on KVOE and KVOE.com here for those of you listening outside of our signal coverage area. And again, our guests here today are Jen Bramson, Joel Truesdell, Kashia Thorpe, Shelley Moore-Krajacek, Terry Caldisdahl, and Keith Ballard. As we continue our program, we've hit on a number of different topics. You know, the basic one, what it feels like to be inducted, be among the best of the best, officially recognized in education. Last segment really focusing in on what got you started, what keeps you in the field. And now we get to talk about kind of a corollary to what keeps you in the field, what's changed in education over the last, in some cases, 20, 30, 40 years for some folks who have been in the field that long in past induction classes. Terry, I'm going to start with you on what you've seen that's changed in education, good, bad, or indifferent.
So I've been teaching for 32 years, and what's dramatically changed for me is right now I teach history, and early on it was all about the content. Like, here's what happened in ancient Egypt, here's what happened in ancient Greece, here's what happened in ancient Rome, and now it's much more. I spend the majority of my time focused on is that a credible source? It's like, what do you know? How do you know it? And why does it matter? And that didn't used to be an issue when I first started 32 years ago. We trusted Walter Cronkite. We trusted where I grew up in the LA Times. We trusted, you went to the library. There was no conspiracy theories. You didn't have to worry about all of that. You didn't have to worry about social media. The crazies would not be found in a library, right? But now it's everywhere. And now it's up to each one of us as individuals, and this is what I really emphasize to my students, that you are now in charge and deciding if this is a credible source. And there's so many examples to use from it. But that's the thing for me, just from a teaching standpoint, it has dramatically changed. And that doesn't touch the tools, but it touches what I focus on.
Okay, I'm going to riff off of that because you and I share, obviously, a journalism background. I'm still in. You've switched over to teaching. But history was my favorite subject growing up. How do you spin or glean from, pull from your journalism experience and then say, here's sourcing for history and figuring out what's legit and what's not?
Yeah. So I use lots of examples. Like there's an example I use where it shows a lion in a street and the underneath this is breaking news, and it was on social media, and it says that Putin put lions out to keep people inside during COVID, and the kids look at it and it looks legit, and they're like, that's amazing. And a lot of people may have seen the shot of the guy on the Twin Towers and the plane is right behind him, mm-hmm. just before it crashed, mm-hmm. which was totally bogus, and the kids see that and they're like, well, wow, how did they get that photo? Like, that's a good question. So right away, and then when we're looking at the fall of Rome, it's like, we can even talk about Egypt. There's a story out there about there was a mummy on the Titanic, and that's why the Titanic went down. And, first thing's like, okay, what do you know? That's what I know. Well, how do you know that? Like, is that a credible source? Where is this information coming from? And I even show them a YouTube video where it talks about a guy saying the first president of the United States was not George Washington. It was John Hanson. Like, well, who is this guy? Well, first of all, you can see his bathroom behind him. It looks like he's still wearing his robe in the morning. I'm like, is this guy really a credible source? And so it plants a seed to the kids that, as soon as you get some information, the first thing you need to ask is, where is this coming from? What's their perspective? What is their motive? Who wrote it? And as a kid, I never had to worry about that. But we all as citizens today need to do that. So I'm trying to plant that seed now to make them better citizens when they become adults.
Right. Keith, I'll ask you this question too, kind of what you've seen in the classroom that's changed from when you got started. You've already mentioned here some of the challenges that you've had, say, with administration, external factors, things like that. What have you seen in the classroom in the last 30 years or so?
Well, the good is that we have a lot of teachers that are doing the good fight every day, right? Even against the odds, low pay, we have a lot of teachers that are there because they love kids. So that's the good thing. The bad thing is I haven't seen great changes in my career through my 30-year career. We spend a lot of money. We're in the top two or three spenders in the United States. Only about 50 cents on every dollar actually makes it to the classroom. So we have a huge layer of bureaucracy that I'm not sure, and a lot of people aren't sure, where the money goes. Certainly, it's not going to most teachers, right? The teachers aren't seeing it. So, the different, and again, it's been highly politicized. Okay, we know that. Let's talk about the truth, right? We have this 50% over here on this side. We have this 50%. And now what's happened is, more and more changes are occurring in education, which are giving people choices, right? And a lot of people are choosing not a traditional public education. And, there's millions of kids now going that route, and it's incremental, as Jen was sharing with me, and I read two or three educational journals, so I'm quite in line what's going on out there. But in Utah, they put out vouchers, which start this year, 10,000 can choose whatever they want to do, homeschooling, right? And they got three times more than that, right? And so the floodgates are going to open. And again, you're going to see more of an exodus out of traditional public education. And I think one of the reasons is that I'm a skydiver, right? I just got into wingsuiting, but I'm a skydiver. And one of the things I like about skydiving are the people, the adventures. But we as skydivers, we support everyone. Everyone is open. You can do whatever you want to do. You can be with whoever you want to be. The thing is, don't take your political agenda and try to shove it down my throat, and don't try to put it up my nostrils. And that's what's happened in public education in many cases. Again, my views are very different. But it's not about perception, my perception. That doesn't matter. It's about perspective. And I have friends both on the right and both on the left. And unfortunately, the ones on the left can't see anything about the good of the right. And the ones on the right can't see much good on the left. And so many people, unfortunately, in the education world are on the left. They can't see the other side of it. So it's been highly politicized. And what's happening, the demise of the public education system, is that people are looking at other options. And many of these people don't even understand what they're going into, right? Because many of the options are first, say, homeschooling. I'll give you $9,000. You got four kids? Here's $36,000. Oh, I'm going to take my kids out of it. But are there going to be any the people that are saying, oh, we want to get our kids, our right-wing politicians will say, yeah, we want to get our kids out of public education. But they're not putting any accountability onto it either, right, as they would in the traditional public schools. It's a mess. So it's a big mess. I don't know if we're going to be able to clean this up. And I will tell you this. From what I saw in the 170 schools I visited in the 17 best countries in the world, we're in a different orbit. We're not looking at what the best are not going the way we're doing it here. Okay? They're absolutely not doing this. And this hurts me and it pains me, but reality is reality.
I know we're going to run over time here with this follow-up question, but I'm just going to ask you here maybe one best practice that you've seen elsewhere that isn't being utilized here.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you one. Okay. I know there's a whole bunch of them, but since we're running out of time, we can't really dive into that topic.
Wow. Well, it'd be a toss-up between career technical education, vocational education. Overall, again, we have some pockets of excellence. But overall, we think we're great, but most people don't know how bad it is. You go to great countries, and then you see what you're doing. Go to Singapore or Switzerland or Germany or Netherlands or Belgium or Liechtenstein, and you see what they're doing and what those kids walk out that don't go to a traditional college, and you see what they can do coming out at 18 years old and what they have. And that's great. And I'm sorry about this, but I'm going to get you on one more. Also, the quality of the teacher. About 50% of our teachers wouldn't even make it into many high-performing school systems. Why? Because they couldn't qualify. They absolutely couldn't qualify. But we have no recourse because we don't have the teacher pipeline, because we pay, in many cases, we pay so low, we don't offer a lot, and we demonize the system. So in essence, to Terry's thing, why would I want to take a really great kid that's really talented and is really smart and try to talk him into being a teacher when here in Kansas he's going to start at $36,000? I'm not sure. Ethically, I don't think I'd want to do that. Do you see where I'm coming from?
I see where you're coming from, and I see where Terry's coming from,
right,
too, with the talent side of things and getting folks into education there. Terry, I'm going to ask you to respond to that side of things. Just that specific point here about getting people into education, especially given the funding and the salary side of the equation.
And I think you can't tell that story unless you're – like if you're a teacher, then you can tell that story. And how are you going to bring about change if you're not part of the system? Mm-hmm. And one of the beauties of being part of this Hall of Fame is that it opens up doors. And so when we were in Washington, D.C., Shelley and I, since we're both from Wisconsin, we're going around the Capitol knocking on doors, and those doors opened. And right or wrong, we were able to meet with our representatives and to tell them, here's some of the problems that need to be resolved. We, you know, we told them about some of the great things that are happening too, but you know, we didn't paint a picture that's not actually happening. So if salaries are an issue, it doesn't sound like it's an issue in California, but it's an issue in Kansas. The Kansas teachers need to get unified. They need to get organized, and they need to, speak up. And, you know, one of the things, and Keith and I have talked about this, is that, you know, the differences between, say, Finland and Singapore is, for example, national standards. We don't have national standards. You know, we are a system based on, back in our founding in 1776, on really the individual, not on the collective. And that's not the case in a lot of these foreign countries. So, you know, if in this community in Emporia, we are just amazed at how well it's taking care of itself. I mean, with everywhere we went yesterday, with the historical tour and the zoo and the university, and, you know, I think that's kind of the American way, is that you take care of your own. And if we wanted to change that system, then you're talking about not just changing the system, you're talking about changing the culture. So, you know, one of the things that, you know, we hope we can do is we see the great things that are going on in our school district and try to get that to grow. That's the whole point.
Understood. Kashia Thorpe, really quickly, I'm going to ask you what you've seen that has changed in education, and we'll take our final break.
Of course, as an immigrant coming to the U.S. and being in schools that mostly teach immigrant and refugee students, that's one of the biggest change. And I think that's also one of the changes that have happened in Emporia over the years, is that it's become a lot more diverse within the student population. And with the U.S., that's pretty much the same thing that has happened. We have a lot more immigrant and refugee students, and I think that brings a lot of benefits educationally and also a lot of challenges to our classrooms. And I think with that, most teachers are not prepared for a lot of those challenges, or not necessarily prepared in terms of the training, the culturally responsive training that they need in order to really support these students. And as a result, and I think you also talked about, Keith, you also talked about CTE programs, career technical programs. And so that's one of the things that we could get better on, because a lot of those students, they don't understand that because of their background and the time they enter into the U.S., most of them will not be able to acquire the language to a point where they'll be able to go to college and be able to understand, be able to adopt to the rigor of college academics. And so they will forego college. But how are we preparing them to go out into the real world to really be successful men and women? And because the demographics is changing, how we teach has to change, and how we support them in our overall community has to change. And like Tara was saying, in terms of Emporia, one of the things that I really love about here is that camaraderie, that small family feel, that sense of belonging. And I think when you go into a classroom, before those students can even begin to learn, they have to feel accepted. They have to feel valued. They have to feel loved and feel like they have a sense of belonging in order for us to move forward. And that's going to create a pathway of success for them. And representation in the classroom has to change as well. We don't see a lot of diverse backgrounds of teachers, and I think that, of course, we know what research says, right? When students experience at least one person from their background academically, they're more likely to succeed and also more likely to pursue college education or continue to be lifelong learners. So we need to see more representation of our diversity of our students in the classroom.
Okay. Well,
real quick, I promise, going back to her, it's not just CTE programs. Viable, excellent CTE programs would support immigrants, but they would support all kids, right? There's a lot of kids that don't want to go to college. There's a lot of college degrees when you go, a lot of liberal arts degrees that pay nothing. They're worthless almost when you get out. I know, I talk to these kids. So setting up kids with jobs that they can go, and there's a lot of jobs out there, right? In construction alone, we have darn about a million jobs that are currently unfilled, right? Good paying jobs. So there's a lot of potential in a great CTU program, and we so many school districts, so many states, we think we're great. We don't know how bad we really are.
Joel, and this is a bit of a break here from what I had initially anticipated. Our final break is coming here, but Joel, what is your thought here on what you've seen that's changed so far?
What's changed is we've gone from a teacher-centered classroom to a student-centered classroom, realizing that that's the best pedagogy. And so, but the problem is, relative to professional development, and a lot of the schools where it's needed the most, they don't have that funding for that. And it's really, you need people out there to be able to help them do that. In my class, I would have kids reading at the 5th and 6th grade level in a 10th grade chemistry class. But in the type of classes that, talked about and Keisha talked about, those kids in a proper classroom that some teachers would say are not capable and need to just go into, you know, a blue-collar type of job, they get A's. It's because I really believe that so many people judge a student to be not the level that they evaluate them is just based on some Western type of system of grading. And so if the pedagogy is there and it is kind of universal within the United States, all of our kids would be really good students.
Joel Truesdell, Shelley Moore-Krajacek, Keith Ballard, Jen Bramson, also Terry Caldisdall and Kashia Thorpe, our Talk of Emporia, I should say, our on-air chat guests here today. We'll take our final break. We'll wrap things up talking about how being an inductee changes a Okay, I apologize. Okay, well, let me ask two more questions, and we'll be done. Thought we had one more break, and we don't. Jen, let me ask you, how being involved in this induction class really maybe changes your approach in the classroom with your students?
My approach in the classroom is changing kind of based on what you said. We're seeing a big shift in our students since COVID. We really are focusing on that social-emotional contact. We're seeing a lot of struggling emotionally since COVID with this generation and really taking a more student-led approach, like Joel said. And I'm sad that more paraprofessionals do not receive professional development that is culturally relevant to what they're doing, and high quality and consistent professional development. So I really am trying to bring that to my state, to my paraprofessionals with the help of the NEA. So I am excited to have that opportunity to have people that are willing to support me to bring programs to my people back in my state.
Good deal. Shelley, how about you? What does it mean for you? What does this induction honor mean for you and adjusting maybe your approach or confirming your approach in the classroom?
All of us had the luxury of being surprised in our schools with this honor. And my class of students who was there with me included the class president, who is among the most of my population of students who are high poverty, first generation Americans. Over 50% of my school district is high poverty. Over 50% identify as students of color, and 30% are first-generation Americans, most of whom came when they were in middle school age. And this particular child lost his mother, surprisingly, a month ago. And he said to me at the ceremony, just after he spoke on my behalf, he was one of my nominators, he said, "Why are you here? You could be anywhere. You could do anything. I'm finishing a doctorate right now," and they know that, and they say that all the time. "Why are you here? You're too smart to be here." And that just makes me know more that my students, that those students, that all of our students need to know that they deserve our kindness, our support, our expertise. They deserve our guidance. And that particular child is going on a full scholarship to the University of Wisconsin-Madison, where he is going to be a math teacher. And that's what we need to do every day.
And I'll just add to that, you're right. They deserve all of what you said, and they also deserve our world's best teachers.
Yes, they do.
Well, in that way, I think we'll close down the on-air chat here today. I really want to thank our panel for joining us here This morning we've got Keith Ballard, again, middle school music teacher from San Diego, California, middle school history teacher Terry Caldestall, Dousman, Wisconsin. We have high school English language arts teacher Shelley Moore Kajasik, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, joining us today. Plus, again, assistant principal, former English success coach Kashia Thorpe, Springdale, Maryland. Retired high school chemistry teacher Joel Truesdell, Hilo, Hawaii, and 2024 Education Support Professional of the Year paraeducator Jen Bramson, Park City, Utah. Our Teachers Hall of Fame induction class for 2024. Again, don't forget that the annual band concert, the ice cream social tomorrow evening at Fremont Park, activity starting at 7. The rededication of the Memorial to Fallen Educators, 10 o'clock Friday. That'll be on KVUE and KVUE.com/TV. The banquet and induction ceremony coming up Friday evening starting at 5:30 with the doors opening up at the Memorial Union Web Hall. It's 11:07 on KVUE and KVUE.com. That wraps things up here for you today for the on-air chat brought to you by Bruce Davis Construction. All the information you need, live and local.
96.9 FM, K245BQ Emporia, AM 1400 KVOE Emporia.